Well, welcome back, everybody. I think I'm going to sound a little bit like Phil from yesterday. It was a rich and lively debate and discussion in our group, and I wish I'd been able to sort of whiz around all of the other groups. It's my pleasure to sort of now introduce a series of people who will feedback from each of the groups. And first of all, known to many of you, and certainly for those of you who came to Oxford 2 years ago, Alison was in many of the sessions. Alison Campbell, to feedback from her group.
Thanks, Joe. Well, we of course had a really good conversation, and it was quite wide ranging, but we did try to keep to topic as much as we can. So we were talking of course about the importance of international collaboration and looking through that lens of UK and US collaboration. We moved on to a broader discussion, not provoked by me, I'll have you know, about collaborations, transnational collaborations, not just UK. US and the importance of those, and we felt that the NIST UKRI relationship and MOU was really fantastic, and we'd welcome seeing that kind of thing happening more often. But we did also recognize that the challenges sat around the purpose of creating such relationships, what you needed to get out of it, and the importance really of having a particular focus and a challenge-based focus. And we talked about how we might think about approaching that, and thought that global challenges were absolutely terrific. But the inherent issue with the global challenge is that it was global, so everybody was facing the same challenge. But there were two things that came out of that. One, we thought that you potentially needed to start thinking about layers below that and how you might get together and actually forge meaningful relationships, and I guess really thinking about formalizing those kinds of relationships, maybe at specific technology type level. That then brought us on to talking about the fact that you needed to have some very active coordination to make that possible and to make that meaningful, and that actually it could be something that's built back from needs, rather, so very much a pull rather than necessarily a push, and a coordination where the sum of the parts were greater than individual, and also the sum of the parts didn't mean duplication. So we felt that keywords that applied around that were clustering, direction, and they were support. But then we said, well, who would do that? Who would really try and bring that together? We had a great example of European bioimaging, and how that's really come together, and that really is about bringing diverse and different skills and expertise together. But a reflection that actually these things can take a long time, and that in itself took 12 years to get motoring, really properly embedded. And so we need to think about that, and I think one of the issues that came out was that, but accelerated. And then we moved on to some of the challenges that sat around transnational collaboration. And of course, security came up as a big risk. And we also discussed the worry and the concern about security as being a potential inhibitor of relationships and pushing forward research and innovation. And that said, it's very clear that the importance of building more due diligence into collaborations is here to stay. It's going to have to grow. And with that, so not just the people who are doing due diligence as part of their job, but actually blending that into an awareness among the research community as well. And we saw some analogies to the entire impact agenda there, where not only were there impact professionals spawned as a cadre, but also researchers themselves became much more familiar with the impact agenda. And we did feel that there could be some hope for engineering this into things more, because it is a pressing and significant issue. And one of our number did say, and I think it's just worth repeating, the recent speech from the MI5 director, which was talking about the importance of protection of knowledge. So our sense was that we needed funders to lead on this security issue, but where they led, others would follow. And we actually felt we'd like to make a recommendation that we needed better resourcing for due diligence support, particularly within universities. And finally, when we were looking at transnational collaboration and the real benefits and the challenges around it was collaboration, was communication, and communication in all of its forms. And what we were reflecting on, and of course, as many will have spoken about yesterday, is the fact that at the moment, we're doing fine, but we're having very transactional conversations. And if we're really serious about the research and innovation agenda, we need to get back to having more creative and disruptive conversations that will spawn more ideas and actually more solutions. And of course, the informality of conversations over coffee, in the bar, etc. So we think that that's absolutely crucial going forward. And I guess something that we just felt it was important to flag, we really mustn't forget when we're looking at any of these kinds of sort of collaborative ventures, the importance of people and the importance of relationships. And then we had one final thing to put in left field, which was not to assume that the world was indeed a level playing field. And if we're thinking about diversity and diversity in all of its senses, we really have to consider, and this is particularly within the communications piece, that not every country is quite on the same in the same place from a sort of technological and an IT perspective as others. And so we need to think about that as we think about how we engineer some of these collaborations. And with that sort of diversity in mind, actually thinking about the fact that collaborating with some countries, say Africa, which isn't as well provisioned, actually may be an opportunity to look at where those needs lie as part of the greater research and innovation challenges that sit around the world. So let's be open, let's be diverse, and let's keep talking. That's us. Thank you.
Hello. Joe, are you going to introduce me, or I'm going to introduce myself at this stage?
It seems to be I'm going to pass to you, but the esteemed Alice Frost from Reception.
Right, okay. So my group was small, but a really, really great problem-solving group. So I thought we made quite a lot of progress on the opportunities and the challenges. So, I mean, we started off, I was the only funder and I had some universities and they all beat me up for the question of funder bureaucracy. And I confessed to the fact that we have a collaboration fund called the Connecting Capability Fund, where we have funded, I think, a university in Colombia as a partner, but wouldn't fund one in Scotland. So I think we then agreed that they're, you know, and I think we, in some ways, they forgave me and we dismissed funder bureaucracy to some extent. But I think the team made a good point that, you know, they detected in funders and public agencies that speak, you know, there is a strong sense of unilateral agendas and importance of their own countries. And, you know, and therefore leaders and agencies need to speak in sort of multilateral terms to encourage multilateral collaboration. I think the second point we made was then we got really stuck into, so we thought that was quite the kind of, some of the funders issues we talked about were probably too small scale, and we really need to look at the kind of designing the big challenges that are really worth doing in a multilateral sense. And I think the team did really good in terms of defining where those kind of multinational kind of approaches were best. And I think we a successful one we cited was under a past UK government Prime Minister David Cameron. There was something called the Venture Discovery Fund on Alzheimer's, which looked into novel drugs and pulled together universities and researchers, venture capital and entrepreneurs, and that was thought to be a good model. And though there was also noted a model that similar challenge that hadn't worked so well was something like antimicrobials. I think the team then sort of defined the criteria for these kind of big challenge efforts, and they were where there was a large concerted effort is needed, but with a very focused challenge. And that was the difference between, say, COVID-19 and climate change. The climate change is lots and lots of challenges, whereas COVID had that kind of real focus. And finally, it had to be a compelling problem, which put the problem at the highest level of attention in many different governments' minds. And I suppose we talked in terms of whether there was an opportunity in something like developing post-pandemic resilience in a multinational sense. So I think that was a very interesting discussion there. And finally, I think, as in Alison's group, we then talked, although we'd moved from the kind of bureaucracy to the big picture, we then talked a little about social capital that underpinning these kind of big multinational challenges, that multilateral challenges that governments and organizations might engage with. It is important underpinning that to have a sense of social capital and a sympathy and engagement and a common language across the participants for these multilateral challenges to work well. I suppose then we reflected that science and research is very much there is a sense of a common community, a common purpose and a common language. So it's not it's understandable that why then many governments look to research, science and innovation as being a potential source of future multilateral actions. So that was our view.
Well, thanks, Alice. So our group, my name is Fariba, by the way. I work with Joe at the National Center for Universities and Business. So we had a really great representative group in terms of industry, university, and kind of the third sector, as well as across international boundaries. We had representation from the States, Canada, and the UK, and Belgium, in fact. So really good discussion. I think we started out in perhaps a bit more negative on the role of government. There was in terms of impressions, from a UK perspective, there was recognition that the government has had great ambition, but there's been a lot of setbacks in terms of the kind of communication and policy rhetoric that's kind of followed. And there was recognition as well that it's been difficult to get through some of the red tape that makes collaboration happen. But recognizing as well that we should be accountable to governments who allocate funding, that's obviously part of the equation, but sometimes there's too much emphasis on the government itself kind of actioning that change, and whether there's too much involvement at times, and the kind of geopolitics that sometimes drives this agenda. Recognizing that sometimes it's better to delegate to the partnerships to deliver the best work and allow those to kind of go forward and make things happen. There was some discussion around whether a state can ever be truly entrepreneurial if it's state driven, but also understanding that kind of sweeping away all of the red tape doesn't always work. So there is a role for government, and that can be around incentives and ensuring that we are making the right decisions, putting in the red tape where it's effective, and putting in the right people to make quick and well-informed decisions. We talked about seeing more scientifically educated people at the top table, and that was a real positive, and that should continue, and they should be listened to. The flip side being that policy and science can then become intertwined, and the policy changes, and certain sciences drop. So, I guess the fallout from COVID, for example, the public unhappiness can be directed at scientists in the same way as politicians, whereas they're not politicians. So really needing to take that kind of damages the public trust in science, and trying to obtain a balanced approach where we're being collaborative, but keeping that the science and policy separate in the eyes of the public. We talked about governments kind of truly incentivizing global collaborations in R&D, building those linkages between institutions where universities find it difficult to create those partnerships themselves. And that really needs kind of that thoughtful government intervention to speed up and create those productive partnerships. So someone brought up the global pricing partnership approach whereby I think governments agreed across different nations that how they would approach it, and that has really catalyzed R&D collaboration in that area. In Canada, at a municipal level, we talked about the right approach to national government intervention, and where those powers should perhaps be devolved and how that can really incentivize regions to adopt recommended initiatives such as green energy, for example. The discussion flowed into open access and open data, a really interesting but very nuanced debate. Not every country views the role of open access in the same way. So recognizing that sharing research routinely is very useful, but it can, in some instances, it is needed that, you know, closed data is, or closed research is a necessity. And then we got into the question, the kind of discussion question too, I guess, the challenges around collaboration. And we inevitably Brexit and the cuts to foreign aid were recognized as big challenges here in the UK. It's also been the kind of big drop that's been associated with postgraduates coming from abroad, increasing numbers of protocols facing researchers when they wish to collaborate. So that gets into the red tape debate. And GDPR has been a big one for colleagues in the European Union and certainly for the UK in the past as well. And that's kind of really prevented speedy responses to the pandemic as one example, whereby the, you know, collaboration just didn't happen because there was so much GDPR red tape to get through. We also talked about, again, the security issues, just like other groups, relationships with China have been so closely scrutinized, and this has really hampered collaboration across the board. Some institutions feeling caught between the politics of international situations and just not having clarity on where, you know, how to deal with this, where they can move forward, where they need to be more more cautious, and what are the guidelines, and really needing that clarity to enable these partnerships to happen. We talked about kind of multidisciplinarity and interdisciplinarity of partnerships and how these are often created by organic contacts, not always, but who aren't always necessarily the best people to collaborate on the work. So we need to be more strategic and cycle experts in and out of a project over a number of years. So not just the usual 3-year funding cycle, but making sure that that's kind of, we're looking across the piece of a research project where new experts are able to become coming into that collaboration or that partnership. So needing to find the balance between many collaborators sharing expertise, but not diluting the outcomes. We also talked about where we're moving into. I think this kind of dominated the discussion a bit. Where we're moving into an era that seems to be more state controlled. That's definitely of concern. It has led to more interference. It goes even beyond budget cuts. But in some countries, this is becoming more of an ideological debate, as there hasn't been a lot of pushback because most believe that governments have reacted well to COVID and do not want to oppose the plans. So recognizing again that R&D can be used as political capital or collateral, and the kind of the funding or the policy initiatives haven't always followed the rhetoric. And then we kind of touched on Ottilien's point in the final kind of questions in the last session, which are about how it's returning to this debate about metrics and needing to consistently justify the funding and measure impact that return on investment can also hamper some of these international partnerships where impact is less tangible or maybe longer term, and this need to kind of satisfy the government impositions around kind of shorter term impacts or what it demonstrating that return. So a really lively discussion, and it made some really good progress. So I'll leave it there.
Okay, I'm going to assume you can all hear me all right. I'm Mark Schmidt. I'm Associate Vice Chancellor at North Carolina State University in the U.S. We had a very good discussion in our group and talked a lot about collaboration and as a function of partnerships, but also with a slant towards commercialization. So, and I should also note, we ended up combining sessions, so I'm somewhat giving an update on behalf of Greg King and his session as well, and sharing that jointly. So we started talking a little bit about whether there's a mismatch between individual or institutional incentives for partnering. And I thought this was an interesting approach because it really carried forward across a lot of discussion topics that we had and kind of set the tone for not just whether those incentives are in place for partnerships, but also as a function of commercialization. And so in thinking about that, we also recognize that often when we're trying to develop partnerships where there might be a bit of a commercialization mindset, sometimes the financial model doesn't always support the mechanisms to drive that one way or the other. And part of what we discussed there as well was that, you know, the priorities of an institution might be different from sometimes from the career motivations or the commercialization motivations of individuals with those with research. And sometimes that can get out of sync relative to not being able to achieve a larger goal in total when those elements aren't aligned. We also spoke about the function of different regional differences or differences by countries, perhaps, and whether there's more of a focus in the U.S. around partnering internally amongst different institutions within a particular country, or if there are incentives to go beyond that to foster more international collaboration. And as we think about some of the grander challenges and that could be approached through multilateral research, certainly, I think we would all aspire to more of that international collaboration approach. But we recognize that perhaps in the U.S., our incentives are more to function within country and maybe less around international collaboration. But it could be very different and probably is very different in the UK and EU relative to trying to have more international collaborations and the like. So that brought up a great discussion around, do we have the incentives to switch, or do we need to switch or change our starting points? In other words, are we going to be disadvantaged by having that kind of mismatch of approach relative to how we can all work together to solve the bigger problems? We also had a really good debate around whether this is a common issue across all disciplines, or if perhaps we could solve some of this differently by choosing a discipline by which to drive and somewhat target different partnerships. And a great example of that was through global health, where it's almost encouraged or required for all of us to work across and maybe less around the boundaries or the pursuits that we've started with. We also talked about whether there could be local or regional incentives that could be developed as starting points to help move beyond sometimes where the current path is to partnering and collaborating. And I think that could be a good way to maybe incentivize overcoming some of the challenges as well. We also talked about the tensions within some universities not being set up to do commercialization as a function of partnership, and whether sometimes we should think about segmenting partnerships separately from commercialization and perhaps not putting the burden of commercialization on partnership, which I think is novel, but that's, you know, that was a part of our discussion around whether we were trying to, in some ways, when commercialization is a factor, are we trying to make a university into a business or a business into a university? And how do we need to be more deliberate about that? And are our approaches trying to overcome sometimes existing headwinds or policies, or do we need to think about how to influence policies, but also create added incentives to overcome this fundamental challenge that we started with around the mismatch and incentives that ultimately could be, in place of or sometimes challenging just the fundamental principle of how we partner best. We move then from talking about challenges into opportunities to talk more specifically about how we could use partnerships to spur more institutional growth. And I think in that respect, we're talking about institutional growth as a function of partnership, more multilateral research to move towards greater accomplishments through that partnership. And part of that was around finding the right model to partner by learning from others and growing together. And continuing on the versus continuing on the current path that we might be headed on from up front. We also wanted to talk about where partnerships, how we could identify partnerships that are more diverse than just simply saying, how do we work together potentially within different universities? collaborations, but how could we incentivize universities, industry, and government partnerships together, which I think we could all agree on is really the best approach, but how do we incentivize that broader collaboration as a stronger opportunity? And also, how do we overcome the inherent fear of commercialization as a foundation for partnering? Allison had made a couple comments that we talked about as well that I'll just highlight here in closing, which was really around trying to understand how we move from transactional and somewhat incremental discussions when we're on a path which we believe to be correct, but how do we find more disruptive pathways to test, try, and do something different to evolve? And then ultimately, how do we recognize the differences that are out there, find ways across universities, industry, and government to work together to recognize those differences, but then find the right partners and approach to truly move in a better direction going forward. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity for comment. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. And thank you to all of the presenters for feeding back and giving us those rich insights from each of the groups. I'm struck, probably thinking for Thomas Coates-Ullickson, who's got to the joyous task of trying to bring all of this together. I think there is a lot of different themes that have just emerged, and I was trying to take a note of some of them. But I would probably, before I sort of try and summarize some of that, I do think a huge thank you from me to all of the groups and all of the kind of contributions in the group for doing exactly what I hoped you would do, which is to take those kind of opportunities and challenges. And certainly, if Ottoline and Modula were still here, I think we have given them lots of food for thought in terms of some of those themes. I think I'm not going to try and recount all of the different things and summarize the summaries, but I do think one of the things that I was sort of struck by and thought would be the case today, which is that clearly this is at a number of different levels at a really interesting inflection point. There are technology advances, innovation advances that we are, you know, we are right in the middle of this zeitgeist, and there's a real opportunity for the sector on all, you know, in all sides of the US and the UK and across Europe. But I also think we do need to be mindful of the way that the systems in both sides are set up, and in particular how we encourage collaboration, because and certainly international partnerships, because some of the incentives in the system may be perverse incentives. They may push against what we are trying to achieve. But I think one of the things that I was struck around, and I'm going to hopefully set up tomorrow, is that on day one, we've really got into the detail of how have we responded, how have we reacted to a global crisis, and how have we, and I think the community in this broadest sense, science, universities, government and industry, have responded brilliantly to that. Today, I think we've talked about ambition and about how we genuinely become science superpowers, how we push all of the different levers together. But I think what's really interesting and a sort of recurring theme this morning is that what we do need to do is think about where are those next grand challenges. And that kind of gets to this kind of question of why international partnerships are important. And it feels to me that one of the recurring themes is about not just achieving scale, but also achieving breadth. To tackle these grand challenges, we need probably a much greater sum of the parts to come together and have that kind of combined strength. And that hopefully sets up tomorrow, because I think what we are going to look at tomorrow, we've got a fantastic program ahead of us, is that transitioning to a sustainable future, but thinking about how you get the best of universities and industry working together to tackle, you know, something that as, you know, as societies across the globe, we do need to think through and make sure that we are, you know, working together to look after our planet for generations to come. And I think, you know, certainly there will be rich debate and discussion on a very pertinent and topical discussion.